The Israel Report for the latest news and insights with Anthony Reich.
Anthony Reich, Boker Tov, good morning, how are you?
Boker Tov, I wanted to start off with the little story yesterday, the inquiry by Leslie about strange sea tides.
Yes.
I could not find any reference to it at all, and I'm going to have the opportunity, hopefully later today, go and test it out for myself.
Yeah, you're going to have to have an on-site visit.
Inspection. I will be doing that. But I can tell listeners that low tide will be this afternoon around 3 o'clock, 25 centimeters. That is the height of the Mediterranean Sea today. Very, very low indeed, very flat sea. Amazing. 29 degrees for those who would care to come and have a dip in the Mediterranean today. So very, very pleasant summer conditions indeed. I do want to talk about this Mahmoud Abbas story again and his comments in Germany. And I'm sure that listeners who think that they've heard enough about this will forgive me. But I do think that we need to talk a little bit more about it, because the latest on the story is that after a lot of pressure from Israel on various members of the Palestinian Authority, and we understand that Prime Minister Yair Lapid and Defense Minister Benny Gantz both called contacts that they have within the Palestinian Authority to express Israel's outrage at the comments that were made in Berlin, and to expect from the Palestinian Authority that some retraction of the statement will be made. Well, this is what came out. Mahmoud Abbas issued a statement in which he reaffirmed that the Holocaust is the most heinous crime in modern human history, and to say that he did not intend to deny the singularity of the Holocaust, but that he was only referring to crimes and massacres committed against the Palestinian people since the Nakba at the hands of the Israeli forces. These crimes have not stopped to this day. The Nakba, of course,
is... So he doubled down on it in some ways. He tried to make Germany feel a bit better, I suppose, but doubled down on his Jew hatred.
Well, exactly. Of course, the Nakba is a term that refers to the establishment of the State of Israel in 1948. So I just want to make a few comments about this. First of all, Mahmoud Abbas, he has a doctorate. Mm-hmm. And he received his PhD at Patrice Lumumba University in Moscow, Russian University in Moscow. And his PhD thesis is headed the following: the other side, the secret relationship between Nazism and Zionism. That was his PhD thesis.
Wow.
This is a book that was published at the time in 1984 in Arabic, and it has been republished in 2011. And the thesis is that let's be clear that he is not a Holocaust denier and never has been. So those people who feel that he's
so
setting out to deny the Holocaust, that's not the case at all.
Because I thought he was. So why did I think, but it is being said that he's a Holocaust denier.
It has been said. Yeah, it has been said.
But it's actually not true. Very important.
He's not a Holocaust denier, and he acknowledges in his book, The Other Side, The Secret Relationship Between Nazism and Zionism, he acknowledges the Holocaust, and he does say, as is reflected in his statement yesterday, that it was one of the most heinous crimes in modern history. He doesn't deny that. However, very interestingly in his book, he says that the Zionist movement and its leaders were what he terms fundamental partners of the Nazis and therefore bear some equal responsibility for the occurrence of the Holocaust. And he goes on to say that there was an attempt by the Zionist leadership to cooperate with the Nazis in order to bring about the founding of the State of Israel, and that from his thesis's perspective, the Holocaust was a great contributing factor to the establishment of the State of Israel, and this was the plan by the Zionist leaders at that time. He has a number of other theses that he includes in this book, including the role of the the trial, the abduction and the trial of Adolf Eichmann, and he feels that that was also something which was very much part of the plan. But he's not a Holocaust denier, but he does have an interesting thesis about the Zionist movement and how he feels
it contributed towards... So how does that even work? So Germany, the Nazis killed 6 million Jews, but the Zionists were part of that.
The Zionists were part of that in order to bring about the founding of the State of Israel.
Right.
And of course, the State of Israel on Arab land, right. You know, and therefore bringing about that whole thesis.
Wow.
But here's the thing that I want to say, because, you know, in his statement yesterday, he talks about the Nakba and the crimes committed against the Palestinian people. And let's just put a few facts in place that in 1948, when the State of Israel was declared, there was a Palestinian people. The Palestinian people were the Jews living in the British protectorate of Palestine. Those were the Palestinians in 1948. The Palestinians, as we know them today, the Arab people who call themselves Palestinians, didn't exist in 1948. That was not something that was a concept at all in 1948. So the fact that this Nakba was committed against the Palestinians and continues to this day is factually inaccurate, because the notion of the Palestinians has only been a concept that has been termed since 1948. And just to be clear, for those people who had perhaps forgotten about some of the history, in 1948, the so-called Nakba that was committed was that the United Nations offered Jews and Arabs the opportunity to establish independent lands, one on this side and one on that side, and alongside each other, in what was then the British Protectorate of Palestine. The Arabs rejected the idea, and the Jews accepted the idea. That was the Nakba. And then what happened was that the Arabs attacked the Jews in order to somehow grab that piece of land that the Jews had been given as part of the United Nations Protectorate. So that was what is now termed the Nakba. And there's been so much change to the presentation of the history of exactly what happened and who attacked who and who committed a catastrophe against who, that it's just sad.
Well, it's revisionist history. And we know this.
It absolutely is. I think that just, you know, for the sake of the listeners, we just need to remember that every time they talk about the Nakba, exactly what this Nakba is. Because in 1948, each of the Jews and the Arabs were offered the opportunity to set up independent pieces of independent territories. One group accepted it, and we have today the State of Israel, and one group rejected it, and we have today the so-called Palestinian people who've been renamed. And you know, we can talk about how the Arab world saw it in their interest to create this group of refugees, group of homeless people called the Palestinians, and, you know, how that came about. But really, you know, it's
phenomenal.
Very sad history just gets
through. How does he argue the fact that the Mufti of Jerusalem and Hitler were buddies? I mean, there's photos, there's photographic evidence, it was well known. How does that, or does he just completely ignore that aspect of it?
Well, of course, there are things which are conveniently ignored in his thesis, but it's certainly an interesting thing to read, just to see where he comes from.
We should never forget where he's come from. It's bizarre. Absolutely bizarre. But that is, unfortunately, when you're dealing with somebody who doesn't value truth, then I suppose you can say absolutely anything. Let's talk about some of these stories that we wanted to cover. A Palestinian was killed last night and others injured in a clash between IDF soldiers and a Palestinian attacker at Joseph's Tomb. Now, where is Joseph's Tomb?
Joseph's Tomb is located not far from Nablus, not far from Shechem.
Okay.
It is within the Palestinian Authority area. And this is really where I want to open the discussion up for some wider thought about what people think. Because we have this monthly event where Jews are escorted to Joseph's tomb in order to pray there. And that's what happened last night. And that event is organized and orchestrated with the cooperation of the Palestinian Authority and, of course, has security around it. And it is a well-known thing that in the middle of the night, in the early hours of the morning, a group of Jewish worshippers come on a monthly basis with IDF patrol around them to pray at Joseph's tomb and to just come there with the intention of praying and then leaving afterwards. That's the whole trip, and that's what people do. And it's now the second month in a row where those worshippers have been attacked by gunmen, by attackers from around the area. Of course, they do it under the cover of night because the visit is arranged at night in order to try to not stir up any antagonism, to try and do it as low-key as possible, to allow Jewish worshippers to come to Joseph's tomb and to allow them to have the opportunity to pray there with full coordination and not to stir the pot. So they do it in the middle of the night so that by the time people wake up in the morning, there's no evidence of anybody having been there and there's no antagonism at all. But of course, those people who wish to attack this group know that they come under the cover of darkness. And of course, last night was no exception. There was an attack mounted again against the Jewish worshippers. The IDF responded. There was at least one Palestinian youth who is reported to have been killed in those clashes by IDF troops. A number of others have been injured. But here's the question that occupies my mind at the moment. Are we doing the wrong thing by taking Jewish worshippers to Joseph's tomb once a month in order to exercise our right to pray there? Is that something that we shouldn't do? Should we say, look, we know this is antagonistic. We know that there's a potential of attack. We could probably live a safe and wholesome life without necessarily going to Joseph's tomb. Why would we insist upon doing it when we know that this creates a certain level of antagonism? Is that one approach, or is the correct approach to say, hang on a second, this is our land, this is our country, we allow Arab worshippers to come to Jerusalem to pray on the Temple Mount, and we protect them, and we mount an operation in order to ensure their freedom and their right to pray and worship, not only on the Temple Mount, but indeed at other places which are important to the Muslims? Why should we not exercise our right to go to Joseph's tomb and pray there? What is the right approach here? Would we be giving up on our rights to say, look, we can live our lives without going to Joseph's tomb? We'd rather protect people and prevent a loss of life because we know that people are going to attack us. Where are we going wrong here? What is the right approach? I really don't know. But I do think that, you know, as a government, given the fact that we really do protect the right of Muslims to pray at all their holy sites, why would we not be given the same respect in return?
34519 or 061-895-1019. What do you think? I'd love your thoughts. Like Anthony, I see both arguments, but yeah, I don't know. When I think, and I feel passionate actually about both, because I think, why shouldn't we be able to go and pray? We're asking to pray. We're not asking to go and take over and displace people. All we want to do is have the opportunity to go and pray at a site that is considered holy by Jews. Why shouldn't we be allowed to do that? On the other hand, if it does cause and it does endanger people, maybe we should consider that as well. But I'd love your thoughts.
Of course, the danger is that if we give up on our right to pray, it's a slippery slope. What are we going to have to give up on next?
Yeah.
That's the question.
Yeah. It's a real question. 34519 or 061-895-1019. Israel and Turkey have agreed to restore full diplomatic relations. What has led to the restoration of these relations, Anthony?
Well, one can say that this has been coming for some time. Mm. In particular, President Herzog has made massive efforts to restore relations between Israel and Turkey since he took office. He's visited Ankara. He's called President Erdogan on more than one occasion. There was a call yesterday between Prime Minister Yair Lapid and President Erdogan of Turkey on the occasion of the announcement of the full normalization of relations. So this has been coming already for some time. And yet yesterday when it was announced, it seemed quite sudden. It seemed all of a sudden that, oh, ambassadors will be exchanged and consuls general will be exchanged, and full normalization, and there will be regular flights between the countries. And it just seemed all of a sudden to happen. Of course, this follows the deterioration of relations between Israel and Turkey, which really began in 2008 with Operation Protective Edge, and then went through to 2010 with the Mavi Marmara incident, which really damaged Israel-Turkey relationships. And since then, really, the relationship has not been in any condition whatsoever. Yesterday, all of a sudden, returned to full normalization. Here's an interesting quote, two interesting quotes that came from one from Yair Lapid, who said as follows: renewing relations with Turkey is an important asset for regional stability and important economic news for the citizens of Israel. That is a quote from Yair Lapid, Prime Minister of Israel. This is the quote from President Erdogan, who told a gathering of ambassadors in Ankara that resuming full relations with Israel will allow us to help our Palestinian brothers. That was the quote from the Turkish president. Now, we can see the two, the clash between the two of them, and the fact that we don't seem to be on the same page. And when we look at President Erdogan's recent visit to Iran, we also feel that we're probably not on the same page. So I'm sort of wondering to myself why Israel felt the need to rush into normalizing relations with Turkey. And the fact that Turkey seems to be playing both sides of the coin in terms of its relations with the West and relations with Russia and Iran and sort of the Eastern Axis. And I'm sort of wondering to myself whether Israel doesn't see Turkey as a potential intermediary to Iran or a potential source of access, information, intelligence. This is just me speculating without any basis whatsoever. I've not read it. I've not seen it. I've not heard it. It's just me wondering to myself why we were in such a rush yesterday to suddenly normalize these relationships. I'll leave you with that thought because I don't have an answer to this because I just see the lack of connect at the moment. I see a dissonance between why Turkey wants to do this and why Israel wants to do this. There just seems to still be
something missing,
a lack of common thread between this relationship.
Anthony, just to look at some of the answers to the question we posed earlier, Anton L. saying, why don't we just keep the day and time of night a secret? Yvonne says, it's the Jewish people's right to be able to pray there and not to give in. Mike says, if we give up the right to pray at Joseph's tomb and withdraw any troops, it'll be burnt and destroyed within minutes. Yossi says, Boker Tov, it's proven time and time again that it doesn't work. And Leslie says, we keep giving up and giving in the hopes of peace. We gave away Gush Katif for peace. I was in Israel at the time. I can't express the devastation that was felt by everyone. Where did that get us? Nowhere, nothing, just more hate against us. We should not give up any of our basic rights in our own home. Those are some of the thoughts, some of the reactions to the question. Anthony Reich, thank you. As always, very thought-provoking discussion this morning. We'll catch you, of course, on Monday morning, wishing you a fantastic weekend and a Shabbat Shalom. It's 8:01. I'm Howard Feldman. Good morning.